Dave's Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network.
Okay, so here's what we were last time. We were talking about breaking down the sums of squares and the degrees of freedom. Don't worry so much about these formulas themselves. You never do these by hand. But the thing to look at here is you've got a total number of degrees of freedom, which is always the number of observations minus 1. Now it's the number of levels of A minus 1 for A, B minus 1 for B. For the interaction, it's A minus 1 times B minus 1. And finally, for the sum of squares error, or within, or residual, whatever you want to call it, it's A times B, number of levels of A, times number of levels of B, times little n minus 1. And little n is the number of subjects per group. Okay? Now, you might say, what if we have unbalanced numbers? Like if we have 10 people here, 10 people here, 10 people here, and 6 over here. First of all, please don't do that. It's a bad idea. But if you did have that, 10, so it would be 9. 10 again, 9. 10 again, 9, and then 6, so that's 5. Right? Just add it up that way. So you'd get 9 and 9 is 18, and 9, 27, and 5, 32. So that's not, I mean, we have the sums of squares. Again, you'd never have to calculate them. You should be able to probably divine them if you had to, but it's no big deal. The important thing here is, remember what we did with the regular ANOVA, the simple ANOVA, is we took the expected value of mean squared treatment, and it turned out that was, it shouldn't be a sigma, it should be an epsilon, actually. Epsilon plus tau, right? Error plus treatment. And mean squared error is just epsilon, not sigma. Damn it. So we divide mean squared treatment by mean squared error to find out if we had an effect. Remember? So we have, if we get the expected value of mean squared for treatment, it's this. And the expected value for mean squared error is this. Now, to isolate the treatment effect, we just divide that over that. And that isolates the treatment effect, right? So, that's great. Easy. We want to have the same thing now for this kind of analysis of variance. We want to have what the expected values are for the mean squares so we can actually work out if we have an effective A, an effective B, or an interaction, or perhaps all three. So we do the same thing for MSA, MSB, MSAB, and of course MSE. Mean squared A, mean squared B, mean squared AB, which you might want to call mean squared interaction. You might see that sometimes. And divided by mean squared error. So we need that too, because we have to isolate these effects. Questions so far? Eventually this tells you to look at mean squared treatment over mean squared error, and then you go to a table. But we had to figure out what we divide by what. Well, there were only really two choices with the regular old analysis of variance, so wasn't so bad. Here we got mean squared, we're going to have mean squared A, mean squared B, mean squared AB, mean squared error. What do we divide by what? So you would expect it works something like this. I don't know why I keep using sigma there. It should be an epsilon. The expected value of mean squared A is alpha plus, and again, it should be epsilon. I don't know why I have that as sigma. Mean squared B is beta plus, it should be epsilon. And mean squared AB is alpha beta plus, it should be epsilon. You got sigmas all over my epsilons. You know what that means, but it sounds vaguely dirty, doesn't it? Mean squared error is going to be, it should be epsilon. I don't know what the hell I was doing there. Oh, I know what happened. I made one mistake, and because it's very hard to find those symbols, you have to do insert symbol, I was just doing copy-paste, and just changing the alphas to betas and stuff. That's probably what it was. Or I was drunk. Or both. So we just divide all of these by mean squared error, right? Because take a look. What do we have here? We have alpha plus epsilon. Isolate the alpha effect, the A effect, by dividing by that, right? Same thing for beta. this. It looks just like this, right? Except we've turned the alphas, or the taus, into alphas and betas, or even, in this case here, alpha betas. Not so bad. So you're probably not surprised that you're going to divide all three of these by mean squared error. Yes, Stephanie?
So according to the null, we assume that alpha, beta, and alpha, beta are 0.
Yes.
So it's basically epsilon over epsilon.
Yes, exactly. It would be that if the null is true. That's right. So, in fact, the expected value of f still turns out to be 1, if the null is true. And it's greater than 1 if the null is not true. Yep, exactly. Because they have to be positive numbers because they're variance estimates. And variances are squared quantities. They can't be negative. Yep. So that's good. Right. You okay with that? Makes some sense. Now, of course, there's a however. Those expected values are only for the case where you're interested only in those values of A and B that you have in your experiment and no others. So if your experiment, well, we had, what was our example, levels of processing and retention interval, and we had low, medium, and high, and we had, what, 5 minutes, 1 hour, 24 hours. If you only care about those levels, and you don't want to make any inferences at all about anywhere between 5 minutes and 24 hours, for example, or 1 hour and 24 hours, and 5 minutes and 1 hour, then you're fine. And you're thinking, wait, I never would want to do that. I would want to say levels of process or retention interval affects memory like this in general. And technically, you can't. Anyway, that's called a fixed effects model, is when you're only interested in the levels of the independent variable that you have in the experiment. And when you play with whatever the hell it's called, the PA... I'm never going to remember this.
It's almost like pause, but the S and W are switched.
Oh, it's patu. Patu. So if you're doing it patu, you might see it actually. It'll say for fixed effects. It might say something like that. It's quite possible. In fact, I'm pretty sure it does.
You define that as only interested in the what?
In the levels of the independent variable in your experiments. That's called a fixed effects model. What if we randomly chose our levels? So we're going to bring another level of randomness into this, not just, you know, with the dependent variable, which we assume, you know, randomly, normal, all that great stuff. What if we randomly chose our levels for our experiment of our independent variable? You don't really think of doing this, typically. But, you know, I think the book uses an example of sort of an industrial example. Let's say you had a tire company, and they were interested in, you know, wear of various tires they're testing out. They're going to put them in different cities in Canada, okay? You're interested in all cities in Canada, not just to say the five cities you choose. So what you do is you put all the cities in Canada in a hat, and you draw out five names of cities, and that's going to be your variable called city. And then you can use that as one of your independent variables. So maybe you actually randomly choose them. If you do, you get what's called a random effects model. Now, again, all these sigmas should be epsilons. This gets different, and I'm not going to go into the math as to why. I will just tell you it happens because now we are randomly choosing levels of A and B. Okay? That's why. The math behind it is, I'll use the standard professor line, beyond the scope of this course. So the expected value now of mean squared A is alpha plus alpha beta plus, it should be epsilon. Mean squared B, well, you probably guess it's going to be the same, beta plus alpha beta plus what should be epsilon. Mean squared AB is alpha beta plus epsilon. And happily, mean squared error stays the same. Again, this is because you're actually randomly choosing the variables, the levels of the independent variable. And because of that, it changes the math. Okay? So now it gets a little more complicated, right? Because now you have to look at this and say, how am I going to isolate the effect of A? Well, I'm going to divide mean squared A by mean squared interaction, mean squared AB. I'm going to divide beta, B rather, to isolate the beta, mean squared B over mean squared AB. Now, if I want to just isolate the interaction effect, I'll do what I did before, divide mean squared AB over mean squared error. So because the expected values of the mean squares change, we have to change how we divide it. And that's simply because we changed the way we did the experiment. Yeah, Stephanie?
Can you talk about it again?
Yeah. Yeah, so you're going to take mean squared A. Mm-hmm. Well, what do we want to do? We'll isolate the alpha. Okay. Well, it's got these two terms, and that's got these. Oh, good. We can just divide by mean squared AB. For mean squared B, same thing, by AB. And for AB, we're still going to divide by mean squared error. But mean squared AB becomes what's called an error term for mean squared A and mean squared B.
But with that one there, you do treatment and error, so you're always dividing it by error, right? Like, isn't that how the other one works?
But the only thing you're trying to do, Danielle, is you're trying to get to a point where this is the only thing left. This is the only thing there. And the only way we can do that, if we divide this...
I get why you divided out the AB.
Yeah.
Like, shouldn't you also be dividing out epsilon as well?
I don't understand what you mean.
You are. The expected value of MSAB.
The expected value of MSAB...
Includes epsilon.
It says sigma. It really should be epsilon, right? So look what happens here. We've got... What's the extra thing in the top? It's beta.
For B.
For B.
Yes.
Okay. Now, we want B on its own.
I understand that. I'm just not sure how epsilon... How is that taking out epsilon? Mean squared B. Maybe I need to go back.
Take a look at mean squared B. We got beta plus alpha, beta plus epsilon.
Right.
What can we divide by that leaves only beta?
Well, I would think AB and epsilon.
That's what MSAB is. Alpha, beta plus what should be epsilon.
Oh.
Okay. You see that?
Okay. Oh, so the... No,
make sense?
Yes.
So the interaction...
Just expressions of the one before.
Yeah, so the interaction actually becomes the error term for the main effects. And then if you want to test the interaction, you divide by mean squared error. And it's because, as I said, we're now randomly choosing levels of both A and B. And if we're doing that, it changes how the math works. That's all behind this. So that's a random effects model.
Okay.
Yes?
What happens with the alpha and beta left over?
How do you mean? Oh, that. What happens to the alpha and the beta that are left over? MSAB, yeah. So again, it's exactly, oh look, you're doing basically the same thing as we did here. Right? With tau plus epsilon over epsilon. Except now, this epsilon thing is bigger. Like the extra thing we want to take out, it's got two things in it. Alpha, beta plus, well, and sigma, yeah. Right? I know it's odd that because of the way you do the experiment, it could change the expected values of the mean squares, but you have to think because we are randomly doing it, the independent variables become random variables. It's a strange thing to think of. So divide MSA by MS and MSB by MSAB and MSAB by MSE.
I also don't get how this is any different because you're isolating.
It's different because instead of dividing mean squared A by mean squared error,
right,
you're now dividing mean squared A by mean squared AB.
But you're just isolating it out anyway. So it
doesn't... Oh, conceptually, you're right. And yeah, all you're doing is you're still going to use an F-test. The degrees of freedom are going to change depending on the kind of model, fixed effects or random effects. Conceptually, you're doing exactly the same thing. You're right, Daniel.
Okay.
But you're dividing by a different term. You would think you would always, intuitively, you would think you would always divide by mean squared error, and that just simply isn't true. Sometimes, when you randomly select your levels, you'll be dividing the main effects by the interaction.
It just seems like you're just adding another thing to divide it out, so why not just add in the first, you know what I mean?
Because it doesn't, you can't just add things in because the expected values of the mean squares come out of the math behind an L severance, the calculus behind it, and you can't just do that. Doesn't work that way. Because you calculate the mean squares the same way. Exactly the same way for both models, for both fixed effects and random effects. But what changes is the expected values of the mean squares because you randomly chose your levels. Yeah?
I was wondering, I understand everything that you're saying.
Good. Got to be somebody in the room.
But what I may have problems with in the future is applying it and when to know when to use it. So
that's the question. No, of course. Well, I don't know if I can do any math because it'll be... Well, we could look at it this way. Let's say we had something like this. I'll do a quick little analysis of variance. Summary table, source of variation, degrees of freedom. I really just want the mean square and F. We're going to call it A and B by B and error in total. We're going to have one level. This is going to be a 2x2, so two levels of A and two levels of B, okay? So we've got one A, one B, one AB. How many subjects per group? Five. Okay, so that's going to be what? A times B times N minus 1 for our error. So that's going to be 2 times 2 times 5, so 4. 2 times 2 is 4 times 4 is 16. 1, 2, 3, 16, 19 degrees of freedom. Okay. That's the total. Now, let's make up some mean squares that make my life easy. Well, these are all easy because they're 1, right? This doesn't really matter. 300, 400. Let's go. 200. And 16, 16. So let's make it... That doesn't really matter, the mean square, does it? Yeah, so I can just go do that again. But let's make it interesting, shall we? How about make it 200? Yes, that's good. Okay. So, this happens. We've got some setup. I don't know what the variables are. We could make something up if you want. We could certainly consider our original example, which was A and B, are levels of processing and retention interval. Okay? So A's levels of processing, B's retention interval, but now we're using two levels of processing, not low, medium, and high, just low and high, and two retention intervals, let's say 5 minutes and 1 day. Okay? So, if it's a fixed effect model, we divide 300... by 200 here. Mean squared A over mean squared error, right? Okay? So it's going to be 3 by 2. 3 over 2 is what? 1.5, yeah? We did that right? Yeah. 400 by 200, so it's going to be 2. Shit. I shouldn't have chosen 200 for that. 100. Make it better. Because it wasn't going to illustrate my point very well. So it just changed the error to 100. Sorry about that. So now it's 3, 4, and 2. Right? Because I can go 300 by 100, 400 by 100, 200 by 100. Make sense? Is it okay? And it wasn't going to illustrate my point when I made those the same. In this case, because the first example I'm going to use here is this is going to be for a fixed effects model. Now let's say it's a random effect. What we did, instead of just saying we want 5 minutes in 1 day and low and high, we literally put all the possible levels into a hat and we chose that. We got 5 minutes and 1 day and we got low and high. I don't know what the hell else you could put in there. I guess medium. Okay? So now we've randomly chosen them. So this is F if it's, how am I going to just, oh, let's put it here as a subscript, fixed. F, if it's random, 300 divided by 200, 1.5. 400 divided by 200, 2.0. 200 divided by 100, 2.0. The F values have now changed because we're dividing by something different. The degrees of freedom have changed. The critical value here is going to be for 1 and 16 for all of these. But now, for the random effect, it's now for 1 and 1. 1 and 1 and 1 and 16. That help a little bit more? Good. That makes sense to everybody? Well, it may not make a lot of intuitive sense. Yes, please.
What do you do for
the random one? I'm taking mean squared A, and I divide it by mean squared AB. I'm taking mean squared B, and I divide it by mean squared AB, just like it says up here. And then for mean squared, where are we? For mean squared AB, I'm dividing again by error because that's the correct one. No.
Plus.
No.
Then divided by.
No, because that's the expected value of the mean squared, Daniel. Right? And it's this term plus this term plus this term from the model. That's what the expected value is. Just like for mean squared treatment, it's tau plus epsilon, treatment plus error. Right? So you have to pull, you don't have to add anything. Yeah. The calculation of the mean squared takes care of that for you, in essence. It does that. It turns out that way, is probably a better way to put it. Yeah. I know this is weird. And it's about to get a little weirder. Yay. It's going to get just a touch weirder in a second. But again, questions on this? Again, it's because we've randomly chosen our levels. Let's say we do a mixed model where A is fixed and B is random. A is fixed and B is random. The expected value of means, I don't know what with those sigmas. Anyway, the expected value of mean squared A is fixed, but the expected value, so A is fixed, is alpha plus alpha beta plus what should be epsilon. The expected value for mean squared B is beta plus epsilon. Mean squared error, or AB rather, change stays the same, as does mean squared error. So now because one's fixed and it's A that's fixed and that's not a typo, the epsilons are a typo, but those expected values aren't. I know it's counterintuitive. I know it makes no sense. But that is how it works. Yes, Stephanie?
Why?
I can give you an unsatisfying answer, which is because it's because of the math behind this. It would take me actually going and getting one of my graduate student textbooks and getting it out. It's
magic.
Ish. You know what the neat thing is? If you ever have to work these things out, because we're only ever going to really do this a couple more times with other designs, then we're going to just, I'll show you a method to always kind of get it right. Not this is useless. This isn't one of those cases where we do mean absolute deviation and I say, kidding. This is really useful. But if you ever have to work out expected values of mean squares and don't know how to do rather advanced calculus, a good graduate level stats book will have a table in the back telling you how to work it out depending on the design. Most good books do. And the other nice thing is any software, if you say, oh, that's random, it does the right division for you. So what we have now is that to test A, we divide by the interaction because we're isolating alpha. To test B, we divide by error. And to test AB, we divide by error. So now let's put that up in our little example here. So now, F with, was A was fixed? Yes. A fixed, B random. We're going to divide 300 by 200, so that's going to be 1.5 again. But now, it's going to be 4 and 2. So because we have one fixed factor, which is A, and one random factor, which is B, it again changes what we divide by what. No, it's the assumption you're making is that you actually randomly chose it. It's not a matter of being more conservative. It might look that way because of those numbers that I made up.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So So we're assuming that with a random effects model that the levels of the random factor, that's the independent variable, when I talk about factor, I mean independent variable, are randomly selected and independent of each other. Okay? Really, what we're usually doing is kind of a sort of mix of random sort of mixed factor fixed thing. We're really never doing either of them. In reality, we aren't doing a random effects model, though we interpret it like we are. You know, because if you do an experiment and you go like 1 minute, or sorry, 5 minutes, 1 hour, 24 hours, you certainly want to say that I can draw you a curve. And let's say there's a difference between, no difference between 1 minute and 1 hour, but 24 hours it drops off. I can probably guess that at 23 hours it's dropped off too, but I actually can't technically make that interpretation. Because the math can't let you do that. You can make that interpretation, but now the math actually that's behind this isn't really backing you up anymore, which is a weird thing. The question you have to ask yourself then is, because, you know, and some of you guys are, I know Danielle's working on her thesis in analyzing data. They're using chi-squared, right? But a lot of you guys next year will be, you might wonder, what do I do now? Do I have a fixed effects or a random effects or a mixed model or what? And actually, if the only time you would ever really use the random effects model is if you truly chose your levels randomly. Did you really, really do that? Like my example of choosing cities, or I think that's actually the book's example. I'm going to, if I randomly chose the cities and randomly chose the kinds of tires I gave people, yeah, I can do that. Then I'll use random effects. Any other time, just use fixed. Okay? Makes some sense. I mean, it's a pretty stringent assumption. It's about randomness. And it's about randomness and independent, and they're not going to be random or independent typically, so just call it fixed. Any questions about that? All right. So here's our analysis of variance summary table typically. We got a source of variation, A, B, A by B, and error. The degrees of freedom for A is A minus 1, B is B minus 1, AB is A minus 1 times B minus 1, error is A times B times N minus 1, and the total number is big N, the total number of observations, minus 1. To get the mean square, you do just like you always do. So for mean squared A, it's sum of squares A over A minus 1, sum of squares B over B minus 1, that should be divided by, missing there, sum of squares AB over A minus 1 times B minus 1, and sum of squares error divided by A times B times little n minus 1. To do our F tests, we do, typically, because we hardly ever really do random effects models, right? We almost always assume everything's fixed. You divide everything by mean squared error. But again, as I noted there in that cool thing that faded in, which is awesome, sort of very, Keynote is so cool compared to PowerPoint. It really is. You divide everything by mean squared error, but it's only for fixed effects. Again, remember, you're hardly ever going to use random effects. You might. It might come up. But it's pretty darned unlikely. There's a reason I'm introducing it, though, because it helps. It should help you understand something else a little while later. Right? And as a preview, if we thought of people as a factor, then we can think of them being randomly selected. But typically, and look, if I give you something on a quiz or a test, remember we had to fill in the blank one that time? I love those. So if I give you one of those and it doesn't say assume fixed effects, just assume it's fixed effects. I'll usually try to make a point of saying, no, this is for a fixed effects model. But I sometimes will forget. And if I do, just say it's a fixed effects model. Because the idea of it being random effects is so unlikely. I once in my whole career of reviewing articles for journals, I think I'm going to have to turn doing one down because I don't have the time. I one time saw a factor, and I told them I think they should treat it as a random factor, not a fixed factor. And I think it was something like, it was the cages the rats were, like the litter the rats came from. They were using that as a factor. And I said, really, that's more like a random effect, so you should redo your analysis of variance. Here, I've done it for you, because they gave the mean squared error in the paper. And it didn't change anything, but happily for the people that reviewed, that wrote the article. But they really should, and I think they actually ended up doing it in print. But that's one time, and I've reviewed 100 articles. You know. All right, questions about this? All right. You can make the design bigger. Of course you can. Hey, look, I threw C in. So this design now, oh, look, we had regular A1, A2, B1, B2, nice 2x2, right? G1, G2, G3, G4, so group 1, group 2, group 3, group 4. But then I just did it twice. I got C1 and C2. Okay. You might say that's unrealistic. I don't know. How about...
You could even do levels of processing.
You could.
One and then gender.
You could do that. You could do that. You could do implicit and explicit tests of memory, levels of processing, and retention interval. In fact, you could do that, and you could call it Chalice and Broadbeck 1992. Except with more levels. Yeah. It's my most cited paper, and this is like a project, a side project I did, so it makes me happy. It kind of helps when your side project is, I think I'll go work in Tulving's lab for a year, so it's kind of fun. So you see what I've done here? Nothing magic, just added another level, another factor, another variable. What's the model become now? Well, you have three main effects, A, B, and C. Right? You have three two-way interactions, A, B, A, C, and B, C. And now you have a three-way interaction of A, B, C. Holy Christmas. Oh, a three-way interaction is when the two-way interactions change depending upon the level of a third variable. That's all that means. And in fact, you would get that with the design I just described with levels of processing and retention interval and test type, implicit or explicit. You'd actually get the three-way interaction there. That the interaction between levels of processing and retention interval, it changes depending upon test type. Levels of processing doesn't really affect implicit tests very much. So the implicit test, the graph would look different than the explicit test. So that's what a two-way... By the way, a 73-way interaction is all the 72-way interactions change depending upon some level of a 73rd variable. Okay? Now, you never have a 73-way analysis of variance. That would be evil. You'd also need a lot of subjects. But conceptually, so a four-way interaction, which starts to get crazy, is the three-way interactions change depending upon the level of a fourth variable. Okay? You okay with that? Does that make a little bit of sense? Yeah? Okay. You stretching? You're not putting your hand up? Okay. I can't see that well, so it's hard for me to tell. The model changes now, of course. Now it's x equals mu plus alpha plus beta plus gamma plus alpha beta plus alpha gamma plus beta gamma plus alpha beta gamma plus epsilon. Well, I've done this before. This is the 16th time I've taught this class. But look, we had mu before, we still have it. We have alpha before, we still have it. We have beta before, still have it. Oh, we got alpha beta, that was our two-way interaction, we'll call it now, and error, but we've thrown in gamma, which is this third variable, right? Well, then it's going to be, it's got to interact with alpha,
and then with beta, and then there's going to be a three-way, alpha, beta, gamma. See, now you're going to be doing a lot of F tests. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 F tests, not just 3. And it could get crazy if you added in something else. You know, what? Alpha, beta, gamma, delta. Alpha, beta, alpha, gamma, alpha, delta. Beta, gamma, beta, delta. Alpha, beta, gamma. Beta, gamma, gamma, delta, delta, gamma, alpha, alpha, gamma, beta, alpha, gamma, beta, delta, epsilon. I think I got all of them, but I probably missed a couple of the two-way interactions, I think, there, or a couple of three-ways. So it gets stupidly huge. It can get really silly. You don't hardly ever see four-way interactions. Because with three, it's three dimensions. I can think in three dimensions. You start to get four and I have to think about things changing over time. I have to start thinking like freaking Doctor Who or like I'm on Torchwood or something. Nothing? No one with Doctor Who or Torchwood? What's wrong with you people? Okay. There's a three-way interaction. That's what it looks like. See, again, let's ignore the C2 panel, the C1 panel here on the left. You can see the interaction. There's an A by B interaction here, right? A2 is bigger than A1, but it's much bigger at B2 than it is at B1. There's an interaction. Nice. Look over here. We have an interaction. Same. Oh, but it's a different interaction. That's why it's now a three-way interaction. And you'll see a lot of papers like this. I will tell you that when a student works with me for an honors thesis, I don't let them do designs like this. Because unless you've been doing this for a while, these are kind of hard, can be hard to interpret. I usually let people have two variables. I try to encourage them to have one variable. Makes everyone's life easier. Yeah, but I want a 3 by 2 by 2 by 4 with 2 within, 3 between, and no, you don't. No, you really, really don't. I've let one guy once have a three-way interaction on his design. Once. But he had just this beautiful, elegant experiment. I said, yeah, you should. But that's once. All right. Questions about this? All right. Let you go 3 minutes early because we beat the Russians. Thanks, guys.
Everything for nothing, I can't.
podcast is released under a Creative Commons copyright, share alike 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me because I'm reserving that right. Giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want, okay? Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/broadbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.